Karen, can you hear us?
Well, yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee with Dr. Justin Winzenberg and me, Stephen Jones. Today, we'll be joined in the second half by our friend and colleague, Dr. Karen Gustafson. Hey, do you have any coffee this week?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I was just thinking, I was meaning to ask you what the best coffee was that you've ever had in your life.
Oh, man. I mean, there's so many different kinds of coffee, right? So many different ways to do coffee.
Yeah. But is there like a particular brand or like location that you had coffee in where you're like, this is the best coffee I've ever had?
It's hard to separate out the emotional things of the situation from the actual coffee itself for me. You know, like
for sure.
One of the times that I remember having coffee that was really fun was I had a long layover in Paris and I had, you know, gone down and there's a little cafe right by Notre Dame. And I had a cafe au lait there and it was really good. It probably wasn't the best coffee I've ever had, but because of where I was and,
oh yeah,
you know, and even just the feeling of like, hey, this is on a layover, you know, and it's like, you know, I could just be sitting in an airport.
Yeah. I was thinking about, I don't know how this came to my mind this week, but I think I have two distinct memories of the best coffee I've ever had. And one of them, of course, is in Rome, right next to the Pantheon. There's a coffee shop called Tazza d'Oro. And the coffee is just, I mean, it's known to be one of the best in the city, but it's just Italian coffee is tough to beat. Yeah. And Julia Roberts goes there on Eat, Pray, Love. So
there you go. Out. I mean,
you can see her in the coffee shop. She meets like her friend in Rome there, someone she meets in the coffee shop becomes her friend.
So. That's funny. One of my favorite coffee drinks that I had, and this is like very unfaithful to coffee, but there's in Mexico, there's this place, this chain called the Italian Coffee Company. They have this drink called the Mocha Friorio Frappe. And it's like, it's an Oreo, you know, Frappuccino kind of thing. It's really good. So what's been a highlight for you this week?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of a small one, but I think it's worth noting. My highlights are related to sports, which is kind of funny because there's really no sports happening right now in society. But, you know, two things. For one, the governor opened up the golf courses, mm-hmm. To let people back out on the golf courses. So me and a friend and a couple of relatives social distanced on the golf course and had a chance to get out there and golf. So that was actually a pretty good time. I started golf probably like 10 years ago or so, and which is funny because I grew up in a golf family, but my dad never took me out as a kid. So I ended up kind of really started enjoying it about 10 years ago and played a lot of rounds several years ago. And then last year I almost played none at all. So that was fun getting on the golf course. The other thing is I had a chance to watch the NFL draft.
Seemed like a lot of people were really excited about that.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, there are all these possibilities of what could go wrong with it having to be done virtually, but it went pretty smoothly. And I heard it was the most watched NFL draft ever, but I don't know why I get into those things. I like watching the NFL drafts. I like following sports in that sense. And I play fantasy football, so like that's kind of another little incentive for me to watch it because it's kind of fun to think about the players and things like that.
Yeah.
How about for you?
I think for me, a highlight is that so Jenny and I painted our room, which we've been intending to do for a long time. So we painted the ceiling. The ceiling was like probably had been painted white at some point, but we hadn't painted it since we've lived here, and it just was kind of, you know, gray and nasty. And the blue walls, like I like blue, but it wasn't working. And so finally we got around to painting it, and we painted it this kind of vibrant yellow, and it's very alive and awake feeling. And then put some bookshelves in there, and I got I think you've seen, I've got this little $5 Goodwill find, you know, a suitcase record player.
Yeah.
And so I put that in there and brought up some classical music, and I was reading and listening to that. Like, I don't usually listen to classical music, but it just felt right, you know. And it was listening to the music, and then the room was just bright and cheery, and then also the birds, hearing the birds, you know, out the window,
because
it's warm enough to have the windows open.
Man, I noticed that this week too, just the birds outside. But you know, I got a vinyl record player set up in my office, and there's times where I'll find myself just kind of naturally opening up Spotify and listening to music, and I'll think, man, I've got that on vinyl. Like, why don't I just pop it on vinyl? Like, it's just so much more fun that way. And then, it gets me using the record player. But yeah, then there's just something about vinyl, isn't there? We'll have to talk about that more another time.
I would really like to talk about vinyl another time.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a low light for me, I don't know, I've been thinking about this. So earlier in the semester, I mentioned to my students, are you familiar with deepfakes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
These videos that you can make it look believably like somebody is saying something they're not saying or doing something they're not doing. Earlier in the semester in one of my classes, I mentioned deepfakes to the students, and I think most of the students in there were kind of like, what is that? You know, but the class is change agentry, and we're trying to talk about, you know, what is the world like and how do we relate ourselves to it? And I remember saying, like, hey, I think this is going to be an issue in politics.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be something that we're going to have to watch out for. And I don't know if you heard, but last week there was a deepfake posted by a political figure. And so sure enough, here it's entered into our political universe, which is one of those things I would much rather not be right about, you know?
For sure.
Like, in a way, it's like, oh yeah, I said, hey, we should watch out for this. And that, I suppose there's a very small way in which that's gratifying, but mostly it's like, oh, this is terrible. Because I think along with that, just realizing the different truth universes that people I'm connected to live in, which we've talked about before. I think maybe we should have somebody on to talk about that with us. But
yeah,
this epistemological uncertainty that comes from these different truth universes.
Yeah, and we're probably only scratching the surface on those kinds of things like deep fakes, right? You think about as the technology develops and the capacity to do those things even more. Doesn't it seem interesting how we kind of considered for a long time video to be kind of this objective?
Which it never was, right?
Of course it never was, but it's like we had this idea almost like, well, if it's on video, well, then you just can't argue it. And it's like, that's never been true, but it's even less true now.
Yeah. And photographs before that, right? And they all follow the same thing. Audio. Yeah. I mean, you think about like the stuff that we cut out of our podcast, right? You know, it sounds like we're having a straight conversation. And it's like, no, there's stuff that, you know, that doesn't make it in. And
when it engages in the political realm, it gets disturbing in a lot of ways. Oh,
very disturbing. Yeah. Cause power thrives in that uncertainty, I think. Like unhealthy power. But how about for you? What's a low light been?
You know, I've been noticing this week, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I know I've had anxiety issues like over the years. And I just felt this week at times, just this kind of lingering anxiety, like general anxiety, maybe in that it's not, I can't always tell if it's related to any particular thought in my head, but it's like, I'll just wake up and it'll just be there, just be present. And then I try to process through like, why is this there? Mm-hmm. It's been part of my life for a while. So it's nothing that I'm kind of not used to. I found ways to kind of cope with it and deal with it, but it just is a feeling of uncomfortability. And then when I kind of step back, I'm like, you know, I've got nothing I'm really feeling anxious about in terms of in my head, you know, in my cognition. Mm-hmm. But that's just this feeling of general discomfort is no fun. And it's like, you got to just stop and breathe at times and just, you know, work through it as it goes. I've always found in my life too, that the further the day goes on, the less intense it becomes. So it's weird. It's like, it's there in the morning and then it just goes away.
That's interesting. I feel like I sort of have an opposite experience. It's like as the day starts to wrap up and yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's a different experience, but as the day wraps up, I start getting almost panicky at all the things I haven't gotten done yet.
Yeah. I know. And there are these times where I can connect it directly to cognitive things. So like you say, maybe you get these feelings like, oh, I've got more stuff to do. And then it's piling up. And there are other times.
Oh, but you were saying it's this generalized thing.
Well, it can go both ways. Yeah, it really can. But I think a lot of times when I just wake up in the morning, it's like, I haven't even had a thought on my mind yet and it's there. Hmm. And so it's like, it's interesting. It's kind of this lingering thing. It's also been such a part of my emotional experience over the years for so long that I kind of wonder if it's just a little bit turned into default mode, even when there's nothing to worry about. It's a little odd that way. I mean, it wasn't unmanageable or unbearable, but it's definitely a sense of uncomfortability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really glad about the guest that we have coming on today.
Me too.
Because I think that maybe she'll help us think through some of that, you know.
Yeah.
What's been an insight for you this week?
You know, this will maybe be tied back into my highlight, and I was thinking a little bit about sports more. I remember reading an article, I think it was in the Christianity Today some years ago, about a kind of a theology of sport. And I think it's interesting because there are times where I enjoy sports and I kind of feel like maybe I shouldn't, like it's just a silly thing. Or at worst, you know, it could become competitive, and I don't know why. And Christian circles in particular, we almost view competition as inherently wrong or something. But I kind of wonder in some ways if like sport is in some ways a reflection of being human, because you think about it, right? I mean, I don't imagine animals are collecting themselves together and deciding to race, you know, and see who wins.
That would be a fascinating study. I mean, no idea.
Even the concept of like rooting for a team, it's so bizarre in some ways, but I also think theologically, like it could be something meaningful there that hasn't been explored much. And I know I'm sure there have actually been a few books probably written on a theology of sport or whatnot, but something I kind of want to think about a little bit more maybe in the future, because I think it kind of gets brushed aside. And there are certainly some terrible potential side effects of the sport culture, especially as right. It comes to like idolatry and some of the things that can happen with that. But in general, I kind of wonder if maybe there's more to it than what we've thought about.
That's interesting. Yeah, I have heard sport likened to religion before.
For sure.
Which and is an
for good reason.
Yeah.
How about for you?
I think for me, an insight this week, briefly, is the difficulty of trying to exist between truth worlds. So particularly as I try to be an interculturalist, right, I'm trying to understand people who are on, understand and relate to and maintain a relationship with people who are really on very different sides of issues. And I think that is getting, I mean, it's always difficult. Here's the specific difficulty. When you make an attempt to understand, and I think as I try to understand people on multiple sides of issues, as much as I want to join with them, the fact that I also want to join with somebody who's on the opposite side feels like disloyalty to them. And so the very fact that I'm trying to do that understanding in some ways feels offensive. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, this is something we've talked about in the past, like social constructivism and critical realism. So these, for our listeners, these are big philosophical categories. Maybe we can talk about them more another time.
Right.
But what I'm wondering is it relates to that too is, you know, how do you balance the ability to understand another person's perspective that may think very differently from you, and you may actually even disagree with them while actually maintaining your own convictions. So understanding
yes.
and believing about the validity of your perspective. Even that your perspective might make sense of the world more than another perspective, while also not just dismissing the other person's experiences and perspectives and thought patterns as just so absurd that you can't even engage with it or can't even treat them with dignity. So there's that tension, isn't there?
We got to keep going with this theme.
Yeah.
Another time, because I think exactly. There's so much there. You know what? Our guest is here.
This is great.
We'll be right back in a moment with Karen Gustafson. So I am super excited to have with us the Reverend Dr. Karen Gustafson, who is someone I look up to as a pastor in my life. I just am so grateful to have you with us.
Well, I am just delighted to be here. And actually, you can't hear this, but because they're goosebumps, I feel goosebumps of excitement. I've loved your podcasts, and I love that we can be talking about stuff today together. This is just, yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you. We're super excited to have you.
So Justin and I are drinking coffee this morning. What are you having?
Well, my students will not be surprised at all. I am drinking Argentine mate all day long. Yeah, you can get the leaves on amigofoods.com if you need.
Hey, there you go. Did you get a sponsorship deal?
I should tell them.
So how did you get started on that drink?
Well, I was a missionary in Argentina for 18 years. And so it just became a part of my life. Although it's communal, you know, the same straw that everybody drinks from. So I pretend it's just me here.
So one of the things that I think that is on a lot of people's mind right now with the whole pandemic and then the quarantine is mental health. You know, how do we address mental health? And Justin and I were talking earlier about how do we maintain mental health? You know, we were talking about earlier, just this question of anxiety. And can you maybe help us understand a little bit of where anxiety comes from?
Oh, absolutely. This has been just an area that I think is so important for us to understand as for ourselves, for our families, as we work with other people. So anxiety can be thought of like heightened fear of the future. And so, of course, it gets so complicated for us because we don't even really know what to fear. What is the real threat? I mean, we know there's a virus, but it's elusive. So our anxiety can just kind of keep spiraling. I just want to differentiate a little bit with depression, because depression would be just that sadness in today that there's no hope. So often, you know, anxiety and depression are related, but depression is just kind of that being stuck, that there is like no way out. Whereas anxiety is the fear of whatever's going to maybe happen in the future. But we maybe don't even know what we're fearing.
Can that be both near future and far future?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think where it gets complicated is because sometimes we just want to say, it's just kind of easy. It's like, well, just don't be afraid. Just be at peace.
It makes me think in the Old Testament of the criticism of some of the prophets, you know, where they, you know, they said the leaders were healing the wounds too lightly. It seems like that's a risk.
Yes. Yes. Because there are so many other, wounds kind of going on there that do need healing with the anxiety. So my students get really sick of me saying the same thing over and over and over, but we are bio, psychosocial, spiritual beings.
Hold on, let me just say it back real quick. Bio, psychosocial, spiritual
beings. And so, and everything works together, right? So the bio, the biology, our physical self, our brain, working together with biopsycho, our feelings, our thoughts, biopsychosocial, working together with everybody around us, our closest people, our social environment, and even bigger environment, and biopsychosocial spiritual beings. But it all interacts with everything between it, right? So does anxiety, and so does help for anxiety. So like, let's just take what we're facing now, being, you know, quarantined, or the fear of kind of what's next, that anxiety. So the bio part first. So anxiety, you can think of again like a fear, a threat. And so when there is a threat to us, you know, it's that fight or flight or freeze response. Biologically, let's just do the fight response first. Biologically, our body, our heart is racing, you know, our blood pressure is going up, our muscles are tensing to get us out of the threat. And so because our body does that in threat, when the threat doesn't go away, like your body can keep responding to that threat. Like, you know, if a bear is chasing me and then goes away, that threat leaves and my body goes back to normal.
But if the threat is this unknown, that persists.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I might, you know, biologically My muscles are tensing up, my heart's racing, and I will interpret that as anxiety, fear, threat. It's like it's there, and I might even, you know, suddenly be tensing up, and I don't even know why I'm tensing up, and I interpret that, and I go, it's anxiety, it's fearful. So the biology, right, is always kind of present.
So what does that look like now that we're in this season of being separated from each other? If one of the ways that God encourages us is through each other, if one of the ways that God meets us is through each other, how do we do that?
Yes. I've been thinking about that because what I've been wondering is, generally, U.S. major culture, at least 50% of even middle adults say they're lonely. This is way before COVID-19. And so what I've been thinking about is, what would it look like if we were forced, which is like right now, to figure out creatively what real heart connection looks like, because obviously we weren't doing it well before. And so not getting back to where we were, that really wasn't working very well for probably a lot of people. So what would it be if connection really meant something deeper, like letting you see my heart in a new way, letting you touch my heart in a new way. In another, I think it's, I can't remember, it's 1 Thessalonians, where you will know Justin, where Paul is also in prison and he goes, but Epaphroditus searched for me until he found me.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, what would it be like if, okay, we're all kind of separated, but if our intent is, but I'm going to search for you till I find you, not physically, but I'm going to search till I find what you're really thinking, feeling, and I'm going to let you search for me till you find me.
How do we do that in a way that is, I'm thinking if there's this threat perception, right, this kind of extra large antenna for threat, how do we search for each other in a way that is gentle and loving and not, you know, something that triggers that threat alert?
So being safe is going to be huge. Becoming a safe person. I've asked, you know, my students in a lot of different forms because, you know, many want to go into counseling, many will be. And kind of the foundation always is you've got to build that bridge of safeness to a person. I said, what's a safe person to you? Always the answer comes out, they don't judge, they don't assume, and they're allowing me to kind of unreservedly be me, say what's on my heart, and I know they're not going to judge me or put me in a little box. But they're going to take the time to let me know they're safe and not even push me. So even like finding you, I don't want to push the door open. I want to be so safe that you'll want to open the door to me.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there. I found myself having a conversation with a friend this week that I haven't touched base in a while. And the friend contacted me about a theological question that he'd been wrestling with. And I got a sense in the email that he'd sent me that, you know, he didn't feel like it was a terribly safe question to be able to ask, you know, because there's this loaded environment of the his work context that he's in and all of that. And I thought a lot about that, what it means to be a safe person, a person where you can ask the questions that we're afraid to ask because we know that they have implications for our bigger lives. but to be the kind of to posture towards those individuals that, hey, this is okay. Like, we can talk about this, and you know, you're not going to be abandoned for thinking these things or wondering about these things. And man, that's just, I've had people in my life who've been such important figures who've done that for me, even not just theologically, but with everything. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure I would have ever been able to get married. I'm not sure I would have been ever able to teach, you know, on a college level, if it weren't for those sorts of people working through big questions that I had in my life that were, that didn't feel like safe questions. And so that having those safe people who are non-judgmental towards us when we're wrestling through these things, I think, are important, even when they're not theologically related or ideologically related.
Mm-hmm. And I think the, you know, it starts with us too in noticing our own protective barriers, because a safe person is not going to seem like they have their own tons of barriers around them and protection. And so, you know, kind of working through our own process of becoming that open, vulnerable with the Lord, with others.
It seems like there's also a sense in which being safe, like, you have to also be anchored or rooted. I don't know quite how that plays out, like this tension between being receptive and non-judgmental, but also having a sense of anchoring. How do those two, like, I don't know, it feels like there's a tension there. So how do those two connect?
No, that's excellent. I think that, you know, obviously the anchor is in the Lord Jesus Christ, like my identity in him, like he's not going to change. And so I might, you know, change, other people will be changing, but he's not going to be. And so I think the anchor doesn't even have to be that I know what I'm doing, or that I have become so consistent, or I have become so able to help other people and tell them what to do. But it's like, no, but I'm going to stay tethered myself enough that I know he's not going to, he's got me. And I think my...
And like, that frees you then to be a safe person.
Yes, yes.
Because you're not trying to meet those needs through somebody else.
Yeah. Often in my life, I've come to sort of like points where the only thing that I kind of really, really know is Jesus has me and he loves me. And that's kind of been the anchor of, I might feel in the storm, but he's got me.
So as we wrap up here, I'm curious, you've given a number of points of kind of how, you know, in these various areas of life, the, let's see if I can remember it, bio, psycho, social, spiritual. Did I get it?
A plus.
All right. are there other things that you would recommend, you know, for people navigating the uncertainty of this time?
I would just, you know, highlight doing this together. We weren't made to do life alone. Doesn't work. And to even, you know, be writing, you know, instead of being like the label, the worst catastrophe ever, could be like new labels of like how God is getting us through the spring of 2020, or insights from the 2020 quarantine, and maybe actually, you know, be writing these down, or even my daily list of things to be thankful for that I never paid attention to before, like the hostas outside, you know.
There you go.
Writing, you know, a different title to this time.
I think that's really helpful. I I tell you what, I've had a great time chatting with you here today, and I think that you bring so much to these kinds of conversations that we're just privileged to be able to have your perspective on this, and mm-hmm. your compassion, I think, and your approach towards folks who are going through rough times. It just shines through, I think, in the things that you're saying here, and I really appreciate it.
Well, it's lovely to be with you both. Many, many, many blessings.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
It was so good to have Karen on.
It was. In some ways, this provides an interesting opportunity to converse with her and to be very intentional about conversing. I loved the things she had to say.
Yeah. Did you feel like it connected to some of what you were talking about earlier with the anxiety?
For sure. I love her approach. I mean, when she brought up that kind of fourfold model, again, biological, psychological, social, spiritual, I really resonated with that because I think I found even in my own life that some of the ways to navigate those deep anxieties have required a holistic approach. Like, you can't just do one or the other. You can't just focus on, you know, as if like, you know, the biological components are the sole solution, or even frankly, the spiritual components. So it's such a complex thing. I think if anything, for our listeners, it could be encouragement to say, if you're experiencing deep anxiety and depression right now, like, take that fourfold model that she presented and try to find creative, holistic ways to engage each of those. And that can help you kind of find maybe a little bit of relief from some of those feelings and experiences.
And I think also learning how to be safe people for each other.
For sure.
And I think through, okay, is there somebody in my network, somebody that I'm, you know, in my sphere of connections that I need to reach out to this week and check in with?
Man, it's such an encouragement to hear her talk about it, because the necessity in some ways to have those safe people and how important mm-hmm. they are, man, it can get us through some of the darkest time.
Here's another thing that goes with that, is that my maintenance of my own health is something that I can undertake not only for my own benefit, but because my health is part of what creates safety for others. And so this sense of some of my obligation to be healthy is so that I can love others well.
Yeah, that's interesting. And isn't there a sense of that with family too? Where when I think about it, when I was in my 20s, I didn't have a wife and I didn't have kids. And so mm-hmm. my own health was really, it would impact my friends. It would impact my, you know, my parents, my siblings and things like that. But it wasn't such a heightened context where if things are going really poorly and I'm not dealing with my issues, that all of a sudden other people's worlds are necessarily going to cave in. When you have family, like, that possibility is there, right?
Right. Yeah. And so your students, right?
Like, so students have, too. Yeah. And you've got students, you know, and all of those things come into play in terms of almost a sense of accountability to address deep-seated issues. And that can even just be things even as like anxiety and depression, which can of course lead down other sort of dark paths too. I love what she had to say about being a safe person. And the requirements, dude, of what it takes sometimes to open ourselves up to talking with people in that way.
Well, as always, I've enjoyed our conversation here this week.
Yep. Likewise.
Hope you have a good week here.
Yeah, you too. See you next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thank you for joining us this week for Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee. We had such a good conversation with Karen that we couldn't put it all in one episode. Watch for a special episode soon, where Karen explains the bio-psycho-social-spiritual approach further. Our theme music is by Josiah Enns. We hope you can join us for coffee again next week.